Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We are brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And Jim, yesterday we had three crazy martinis. Today, we don't have all crazy. We've got bad, bad, and bad. And actually, when you think about some of the ones we talked about yesterday, they seem pretty minor compared to what we're talking about today.
No spin zone. No, we're giving it to you straight today. On days there's no good news, we're not going to lie to you. And when the days the news is all bad, we're just going to tell you.
Let's go to the first double whammy here. And Jim, the plain truth here is it's probably not going to happen in terms of doing anything meaningful with healthcare legislation. There's two parts of this now. Last night, a little before 9 o'clock, Mike Lee went to Twitter and made it known that he would be voting against the updated Senate healthcare bill. And at the same time, Jerry Moran of Kansas added his name to the pile. So that meant four no votes because Rand Paul and Susan Collins had already said so. Lee's statement, pretty short, says, after conferring with trusted experts regarding the latest version of the Consumer Freedom Amendment, I have decided I cannot support the current version of the Better Care Reconciliation Act. In addition to not repealing all of the Obamacare taxes, it doesn't go far enough in lowering premiums for middle-class families, nor does it create enough free space from the most costly Obamacare regulations. And so with four Republicans saying no, there's no way you're going to even get the motion to proceed to a debate and ultimately to a final vote. And of course, we hadn't gotten the CBO estimate, which means had Lee and Moran not jumped ship, that's certainly possible that a couple of the moderates could have. In response to the announcement by Lee and Moran, we got this from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Quote, I regret that the effort to repeal and immediately replace the failures of Obamacare will not be successful. That doesn't mean we should give up. We will now try a different way to bring the American people relief from Obamacare. I think we owe them at least that much. In the coming days, the Senate will take up and vote on a repeal of Obamacare combined with a stable 2-year transition period as we work toward patient-centered health care. Well, that announcement made the conservatives pretty darn happy until they got this news. This is the Hill's version of the story, but a lot of folks reporting this. Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and Susan Collins of Maine said on Tuesday that they will not support moving forward with the plan to repeal Obamacare with a delayed replacement. Capito, quote, my position on this issue is driven by its impact on West Virginians. With that in mind, I cannot vote to repeal Obamacare without a replacement plan that addresses my concerns and the needs of West Virginians. And she said opioid funding for treatment and Medicaid are the big ones for her on that issue. Collins, to her credit, in some ways, was the only Republican to vote against the repeal back in 2015. Everybody else who's currently in the Senate on the Republican side, including Capito, voted for that in 2015. So one more no vote on that means they've pretty much got nowhere left to go here, Jim. So we're stuck with Obamacare probably for the foreseeable future.
You know, Greg, this morning is one of those days where I just looked at it and I'm looking at the world of politics in 2017. And I really think the writers of this year have lost the plot. It's jumped the shark. This is a plot twist that doesn't even make sense with Mike Lee and Moran suddenly saying, like out of nowhere, suddenly saying we're going to, you know, actually, bah, 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 we're going to kill the bill. And their objections, like, it really is reaching the point where you have this nagging feeling that some of these Republican senators don't want to get to yes. That no, this is not a terrific. This is not a perfect bill. This is probably not what any individual Republican would put together. This is something of a hodgepodge that you put together in order to get to 50 votes. And you know, Lee and Moran are lamenting the removal of the tax cuts. Well, they took that out to take away the easiest line of criticism from the Democrats. Hey, aren't they dealing with tax reform supposedly in a couple of months? If that tax cut really, really matters to you, you can put it into that legislation. They put in more funding for opioid addiction. I think Mitch McConnell is really trying to put together something that will get everybody together. Would this bill have been what, you know, Republicans wanted? No, but, and you know, do I There are a bunch of guys who I usually really like here, like Mike Lee and Rob Portman, and I have great respect for Rand Paul, but at some point, you got to get to yes, guys. You got to take something and recognize that that is an improvement over the status quo. And deep down, you kind of wonder if all of these Republicans, or a good portion of these Republicans, are more comfortable with the status quo than they are with being on record and being responsible for the changes that go forward from this bill. I'm kind of left sitting here thinking, you know, Greg, do you wonder how House Republicans must feel having taken the tough vote on their House healthcare reform bill, knowing that it's not going to go anywhere? The response of the president has been, there's a fair argument to be made that he has not really spent enough time touting this bill of arm twisting. He has mentioned it every now and then, but you don't see him giving full speech, anything resembling the full court press that the Obama administration had in 2009 and 2010 to push for Obamacare. Somebody else pointed out that, you know, you mentioned Capito. He won her state by 40 points, and I believe he has not done a single event in West Virginia. I mean, imagine if he held a rally for this legislation. The White House has said pretty openly that they don't really care that much about what's in the bill. They just want the bill to sign. And I don't think that's going to work for them anymore. I think you kind of need the president to come out and say, this bill has to have X, Y, and Z. These are the most important components of reform. It is a deeply frustrating morning to be a Republican. And it is a deeply frustrating morning to be a foe of Obamacare. To have this nagging feeling that deep down there are plenty of Republican lawmakers who didn't really want to repeal it and who are more comfortable with it as is and who are going to say, no, I can't support this version because I prefer this theoretical version that exists at some point. If I hear one more call for we need to sit down with Democrats and have a bipartisan effort. Look, Senator McCain, John Kasich, guys, the Democrats do not want tort reform. Which would not be included in this bill. They do not want any form of serious Medicaid reform. They don't like block grants. They basically want to keep it the way it is. They certainly don't want to change any of the eligibility. They certainly don't want to take back any of the subsidies. All of their ideas are Obamacare, but more so. Either more subsidies to patients to pay for premiums or more subsidies to insurance companies. There's an attempt to reinsurance being pushed by Tim Kaine. Or they want single payer. So why can't we just sit down and talk about this with Democrats? Because they have very different ideas of how the government should handle the issue of healthcare. And they want a much bigger role for the government. And Republicans, traditionally, they kept telling us they wanted a smaller version. They kept saying repeal and replace, repeal and replace, repeal and replace. And now we find out, we will not have the votes to do this. You cannot get, with 52 Republicans in the Senate, you cannot get 50 of them to agree on any particular repeal plan.
Yeah, and the default line on this from the Trump administration is also not going to work. I just want to put them on notice for that. The idea that if Republicans don't get something done and things continue to spiral into the death spiral based on the existing healthcare law, that somehow the Democrats are going to get blamed for that, that's not really how it works, because now you are the status quo and you had the opportunity to do something about it. And the fact that you didn't, regardless of the circumstances for how it happened, people don't like excuses. They want results. You promised results. You haven't given them results. You've got a little bit of time left. I'm not sure where that middle ground is to get to 50, but you're going to pay the price.
I don't see how you could go into the 2018 midterms with the slogan, you've got to vote for Republicans so they can repeal Obamacare.
Right.
Because they've that's what you said this time, and you can't do it. So, yeah. So there we are.
Jim, we just need 60 Republicans. Then we can afford to
probably look. 62, probably 64.
Oh, man. Hey, but the bad news just keeps on coming. Let's move on to bad martini number two. I don't know if you remember how Donald Trump characterized the Iran nuclear deal during the 2016 campaign, but he wasn't a big fan. Called it one of the worst negotiated deals of all time. Yet we get this headline. New York Times, President Trump agreed on Monday to certify again that Iran is complying with an international nuclear agreement that he has strongly criticized, but only after hours of arguing with his top national security advisors, briefly upending a planned announcement as a legal deadline loomed. Mr. Trump has repeatedly condemned the deal brokered by President Barack Obama as a dangerous capitulation to Iran, but 6 months into his presidency, he has not abandoned it. The decision on Monday was the second time his administration certified Iran's compliance, and aides said a frustrated Mr. Trump had told his security team that he would not keep doing so indefinitely. Sean Spicer, quote, the president has made very clear that he thought this was a bad deal for the United States. And nonetheless, it's been recertified. Here's an interesting paragraph. At an hour-long meeting last Wednesday, all of the president's major security advisors recommended that he preserve the Iran deal for now. Among those who spoke out were Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, and General Joseph Dunford, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, according to an official who described internal discussions on the condition of anonymity. The official said Mr. Trump had spent 55 minutes of the meeting telling them he did not want to. So, Jim, obviously he's facing a unified front here. Even if Iran is supposedly complying, the holes in this deal, you could drive a Mack truck through. So one of the things that was promised is that we were going to uproot this thing or at least renegotiate it. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, I want to give the Trump administration, in particular President Trump, maybe a molecule of credit, at least according to the reporting of Bloomberg's Eli Lake. It sounds like President Trump was very skeptical yesterday and that he was like, you know what? I don't think I want to do this. He wanted to tell Congress that he would not certify it. The problem is that Tillerson and everyone else walked into the meeting totally ready to do this, totally ready to certify. And the argument was, OK, this is, you know, we're not prepared for this scenario. Crazy. Look, I procrastinate as much as anybody. But if you want to make a big change in your Iran policy, you really probably shouldn't do it at the 11th hour. You probably shouldn't do, you know, at some point you should say to Tillerson, you know, I'm really skeptical of the Iran deal. I think we should gather any evidence that they're not following it. For what it's worth, the Eli Lake article says it appears the administration kind of seems to believe that Iran is pushing the edges, but overall is in compliance with the Iran deal. But if you want him to say, you know what, I think the evidence points to them not complying, you got to give him a little more heads up than this. You got to say, all right, 3 months from now, give me the skeptical version, right? I put together everything and let's be ready to make the case that they are not in compliance so that if we go through with this, we're not suddenly, you know, running around like chickens with our heads cut off and doing this at the last second, you know, that you, and also, it apparently seems within the administration there needs to be a little more broad agreement. Now, I've kept hearing that we are having more and more Iran hawks joining the National Security Council. Defense Secretary Mattis certainly seems to be one. I don't think H.R. McMaster is any type of friend to Iran. So you'd think these guys would all be on board with this, but it seems to have, you know, the other thing is like, again, why is all this happening right before the deadline? I could understand this with the first quarterly check with the administration. You figure they'd be more on board. For again, I want to give the president credit. It sounds like he is, you know, inherently skeptical, but it also sounds like he doesn't put much thought to it until the moment it comes to his desk.
Wow. So,
you know, I'd say he needs to recruit somebody to keep him up to speed on these sorts of things, doesn't he, Greg?
Do you need better White House personnel? Do you need better members of Congress who will go to Washington and do what they said they would do? So in other words, are you hiring? Well, Trump could be hiring at any time. For constituents who vote for their members of Congress, you've got a little while before you can hire. And when you do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, ZipRecruiter's powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. In fact, more than 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours, one day. Just picture it. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And Jim, there are a lot of people, we were among them, who loved that Trump put a lot of conservative people, so it seemed, in his cabinet. And one of the biggest confirmation fights at the time was over Jeff Sessions, the Alabama senator, to be attorney general. Definitely a hawk on immigration. Certainly a lot of Trump supporters like that, a lot of conservatives like that. But there's another issue that Jeff Sessions is involved in now that is not going to make conservatives very happy. This is courtesy of Reason. Jeff Sessions said the Justice Department will issue new directives to increase the federal government's use of civil asset forfeiture. a controversial practice that allows law enforcement to seize property from suspected criminals without charging them with a crime. Speaking at a National District Attorneys Association conference in Minneapolis Monday, Sessions said state and local law enforcement could expect changes from U.S. attorneys in several areas: increased prosecution of gun crimes, immigration offenses, gang activity, and prescription drug abuse, as well as increased asset seizure by the federal government. So this has largely been used as part of the war on drugs, but it's also been widely expanded to a lot of different areas, as Reason points out later in the article, Jim. So we elected Republicans to repeal Obamacare, radically reform or kill the Iran deal, and to leave us the heck alone. How are we doing?
0-3. And I guess suppose we can give Jeff Sessions credit that he has never been an advocate of civil asset forfeiture reform. And in fact, he's been an opponent to it. I think you really have, this goes beyond the traditional, oh, I'm pro law and order, I support the police type arguments. We all probably remember hearing those, some sort of news stories over the years of saying, you know, the police seized this much cash. And the idea that police were selling off the Ferraris of drug dealers and seizing their properties, selling their properties, you know, gold, all the jewelry, all the kind of stuff, that the opulent lifestyle of drug dealers. And the DEA was probably one of the most strong advocates for this and used it the most. In fact, since 2007, they've taken more than $3 billion in cash. There's just one little catch. They haven't been charged with any crime. And most people would say, whoa, 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 that changes things. We have no problem with seizing cash from drug lords who are convicted. And in fact, if you're a drug lord, fine, we don't have a problem. But we just kind of assume that, you know, you want to have the police seizing the assets of the bad guys, not just seizing it from people. And, you know, the Washington Post and others have detailed cases where Oklahoma police seized $53,000 in cash from a Christian band because of a broken taillight. They say once you basically allow police to keep what they take, it should not surprise you. You're going to find some abuses of the system. And, you know, there are now some states that have said, all right, you have to have a criminal conviction. I believe 13 states are there. Eric Holder's Justice Department started limiting it. And again, I think most of us would say, if you're convicted with a crime, then fine, go after these guys. You want to get their stuff, fine. Although some might say, you know, let's say you're convicted of a crime and you pay your fine, should the state be taking more from you? Jeff Sessions does not seem to be all that concerned by that. Jeff Sessions, there's very little indication that they are that bothered. He wants to focus on drug traffickers. No criminal should be allowed to keep the proceeds of their crime. Well, yes, we all kind of agree with that. Let's say, the idea of how much you're willing to allow someone to take things from them without any type of review process, without any type of this being adjudicated in a court of law, really should bother anybody who cares about civil liberties. This used to be a concern amongst conservatives. We used to be skeptical of the government. Apparently now we're not. Apparently we're cool with this because we're convinced it's only going to be used against the bad people. Well, there's just too much of a possibility this will be used against people who aren't bad people, but just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and have violated the law in some manner that we would find minor and of minor consequence. But, you know, the state will want what they have and go after it. So I hate to depress everybody, but this is three bad martinis because under, you know, Republican control of Congress and a Republican administration, government is moving in the wrong direction in these three fronts.
Pretty good day for the swamp. Not too good for the rest of us.
Swamp 3, conservatives nothing.
Jim, I can't imagine how tomorrow could be worse, but I don't want to speculate because...
Yeah, let's not tempt it. So. We'll just say see you tomorrow.
All right, see you tomorrow. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us anyway today. And don't forget to visit our good friends at ZipRecruiter. And you can start posting jobs on ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.